may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's great to be back in the hot seat again.
Yes.
I'm just back from India, a couple of weeks in India. We had our graduation over there. We graduated around 120 students, and it was really quite an impressive graduation, and we certainly did enjoy that thoroughly. We're working on the design of our new campus in Chhattisgarh, which is going to be the second location there in India, and we traveled around. We actually did a little sightseeing this time.
Oh, good.
So we went out to Jaipur, which is the city of palaces, and we went down to the city palace in downtown Jaipur, and were having a wedding going on down there.
Really?
We walked in, they had a wedding, you know, they were carrying the bride in the, you know, the little cart like they used to do in Maharaja's time. And there was a guy there in sandals and sort of shabbily dressed with a drone. He had the Phantom 1 drone. I have the Phantom 2 drone. He had the Phantom 1 drone. He knew all about it. He was taking wedding pictures.
No kidding.
Taking wedding pictures there. And, you know, I was really having, you know, feeling drone withdrawal.
So is this going to be a part-time job for you, taking wedding pictures on the weekend with your drone?
No, I don't think so.
You got enough other stuff going on?
No, no. Maybe I'll crash weddings. Although I did make an offer and it was turned down, we're going to a wedding out in Hawaii, and I offered to deliver the ring
via drone.
and that was turned down. They listened to the drone; sound like a swarm of bees.
And they may have heard
it could be a little bit out of control.
May have heard us talking about you crashing the drone a few times.
And yeah, so that actually didn't work out too well. But it was an interesting trip too, because we're working on faculty development there, and you go to India, and there have been movements where people become more self-aware through meditation, and there was a whole movement on teacher development for preschool, where they help young children get that kind of self-awareness and self-confidence. And that was the basis of the whole Montessori school system here in the U.S.
No kidding.
And so I talked to some of the people who were founders of that movement, and we're going to integrate some of this these techniques to faculty development there in India. I'm quite excited about it, because it turns out that if you really want to teach and help others discover themselves, you start by discovering your own self. And so there's a lot of, I mean, it's just a different world. There's a lot of meditation and reflection involved with this process, but I'm very excited about it. We'll test it out in India. If it works there, I'll send a crew over there to India from the U.S., get a core group trained in this, and we'll bring it back and start implementing it in the U.S. Because the true value of education is fairly intangible. You teach people skills, and, you know, they need hard skills to get a job, and we talk about competencies. But the real long-term value of education is if you can affect the person's belief that they can do something, a belief that they can learn anything, a belief that they can achieve anything. If you can eliminate internal barriers, you just ignite them and they take off. And the specific skills that you're teaching, okay, that's important today, but in 10 years they'll be outdated and they'll learn new things. And it's this internal awareness and focus that's the most important thing, and that's what we're going to start concentrating on, because I think that's really the key of all education. I'm quite excited about it. That's one advantage of having having a campus in India plus a campus in the U.S., we can bring the two cultures together. So in the U.S., we basically talk about having an American education with an Indian soul. And this is sort of this kind of process.
Interesting.
And I'm actually quite excited about it. And but it's glad to be back. And while I was gone,
I got all of this mail.
Oh, yeah. Huge, huge mailbag.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Boy,
yeah,
that was huge. Thank you, Mr. Big Voice. He's so happy to have me back. He broke the union rules and helped me lift up the bag.
No, he was lonely last week and bored. He got to sleep in and stuff.
But he really likes being here. That's right. We got an email from Phil in New Delhi. He's our campus director. Phil said, you know, I travel to Asia a lot. Of course, he's living in Asia. He's our campus director over there. And I want to watch Netflix movies. And I want to get Pandora streaming music. However, once I got here, I discovered that I can't watch Netflix, and I've got an account because they're blocked outside of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I can't listen to Pandora. I can't listen to Spotify, any streaming movie. I can't listen to Amazon Prime movies. Anything that is streaming is blocked outside of the U.S. What are my options? Love the show, Phil in New Delhi, our campus director. So, actually, Phil, you're right. Netflix movies are blocked outside of the United States. All streaming media is blocked, and it's part of the licensing agreement that they have. And the blockage is apparently is pretty much all over Asia. There are a few countries where they allow it, but all of Asia is blocked. But fortunately, there's a simple workaround. Use a VPN, a virtual private network, with a proxy server in the U.S. So what that means, let me explain this in English.
Okay.
You'll get a server in the United States that you connect to, and you put up a communication link between your computer in India, say, and that proxy server in the United States, and that communication link is encrypted, and it becomes a virtual private network which connects those two machines. Then when you request a website in the United States, the proxy server makes that request on your behalf. That's why it's called a proxy request. And so if, for instance, your proxy server's in New York, you tell the proxy to request a Netflix movie. It goes to Netflix, requests the movie. Netflix says, hey, I'm sending that to New York City. No problem. They send the Netflix movie to New York City, and then it zips the Netflix movie through your VPN secretly
to
your location in India. So that's a VPN. It's extremely easy to do. So I thought, okay, while I was there, asking about it. So I thought, okay, I'll go ahead and do this thing. Now, the thing is, there are a lot of free VPN services, but the free VPN services frequently will limit how much data they'll transport. They also tend to be slow, so you'll have to buffer your movie. So I really think if you want to watch Netflix without a lot of buffering, you want to get a paid VPN. And some are better than others. There are about four or five that were pretty good that got good reviews. I picked one that I particularly liked, and I used ExpressVPN, expressvpn.com. So I simply went to that website. I paid for a VPN service, and you could either get a monthly VPN service, which is around $12 a month. So in my case, while I'm in India, I could have paid $12, and then when I come back here, I could cancel it. Or you could get an annual service, which runs around $8 a month for an annual service. So that would be, I guess, $96 a year,
mm-hmm.
which is not too bad. So I signed up for ExpressVPN. Then I downloaded a VPN client to my Windows machine. I've got a Windows 7 machine, but they also have a VPN client that supports Mac and Linux. Download that, and that you simply open up that application on your desktop, and you enable the VPN. And now it turns out ExpressVPN has VPNs all over the world. So, but it's not going to do you any good unless you pick has proxy servers all over the world. They have around six or seven in the U.S. They've got them in probably 20 countries. So you have to pick a proxy server in the U.S. So I picked one in New York City, and with my laptop, and bingo. I activated the VPN, and I could watch the movie with my laptop. Then I went to my iPhone, and the ExpressVPN has an application. So I installed the application on my iPhone, and so I could implement the VPN on my iPhone. I could implement the VPN on my iPad, and so I could watch Netflix movies anywhere in my room – using ExpressVPN. So it was extremely easy to do. The other advantage of having the VPN, once you've installed it, say, on your iPhone, it's, you know, you basically then simply go to the settings, general, and then you, the VPN, you just enable it whenever you've got a Wi-Fi connection. Like if you're at the airport and there's unencrypted Wi-Fi, and I always say it's dangerous to get your email because people can see your passwords. Don't do anything on the internet with these unencrypted hotspots. Well, if you simply enable the VPN once you are connected to the Wi-Fi, then all of your communication and all your passwords are protected and encrypted quite well. So that's a very safe way to use a hotspot without having people sniff what you're doing. So that was a great question,
yeah.
Phil. We got another question from Jim. Now, this Jim was – this was from our chief academic officer. Jim was over in India, too. We just had an accreditation visit over there. And he heard me talk about Chromecast, which, of course, is this dongle that you can plug in your TV set, and then you can have a streaming movie, say, on your notepad or your iPad, and you can transfer it through the Wi-Fi connection to your television set, and you can watch Netflix movies on the TV. So Jim bought a Chromecast for $35, which I had talked about on a previous show, and he had it over there in India, and he said, okay, how do I set it up? Because it uses a Wi-Fi connection, but I can't get it set up on the hotel Wi-Fi.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out that when you set up Chromecast, you basically have an application. You log into the Chromecast. It has its own private Wi-Fi network, and you put in the name of the network you want to log into and the password. And as soon as you then say set up, it configures the Chromecast to log into that Wi-Fi network. But it will not work for a hotel Wi-Fi network because a splash page comes up and you've got to put in your room number and your name and pick a payment method. And so if there's a splash page, Chromecast doesn't know what to do with it. So there's no way that you can set up Chromecast using your hotel Wi-Fi, which is kind of a downer.
Sure.
But of course there's a way around that.
Of course there is, and you would find it.
There is a way around that. You set up your own Wi-Fi hotspot.
Well, there you go. Your phone or whatever, right?
Yeah, well, you could use your phone. Now, I used my desktop. I've got a Windows 7 desktop, and you can set up your Windows 7 device. Also Mac has this too. You can set that up as a hotspot. Now there are two ways to set it up. One is what they call the ad hoc network, and you can go in and you can right click on your wireless connection under networks and sharing, and you can right click on that and you can set up. There's something on a menu that says set up an ad hoc network. And you can do that. You can set up a network, and your laptop looks like a hotspot, but it doesn't work. Chromecast won't work with an ad hoc network, which I discovered after playing with it for the longest amount of time, because the ad hoc network does not behave exactly like a full-blown hotspot. And probably the DHCP, where they distribute the addressing, is a little bit different. So you actually have to set up a real hotspot. Now, in order to do that, you can use a program called NetShare, and you do that using the command prompt in Windows. So that would be you have to open up a program called cmd.exe. So you can search for that, and when you find cmd.exe, that's the little box that comes up with the DOS prompt in it. You right-click on that program, cmd.exe, right-click on it and say open as administrator. It's very important. You have to open it as administrator in order to access this particular program, NetShare, N-E-T-S-H. And so to create the hotspot, I'll just, you know, you've got this command line that you put down, which I'm going to post to the show today. It'll be on
right.
Monday. But it's just NetShare space WLAN space set host network, and then you put mode equal allow, and then you want to SSID, you want to name the name of the, so I put SSID equal quote tech talk unquote, just to put a name. Then you put in the key, and you just put in a 10 digits. That's your password. I'm just using web encryption, so you could just do 10 numbers in a row with quotation marks, and then you put key usage equals persistent, and then hit enter, and then it creates that hotspot with that hotspot name and the hotspot password. Now, in order to turn on the hotspot, you go back to the netshare command again, and you put netshare, N-E-T-S-H, WLAN, start, hosted network, and it starts it. And if you want to stop it, then you just put netshare, WLAN, stop, hosted network. And so you don't have to, once you set it up, you don't have to set it up again. You can just start and stop it. Now, I'll put all these commands on the website, but I'll tell you, once you set it up, it looks like there's a hotspot there. Now, the hotspot has to connect to the internet. So initially, I've set up a hotspot not connected to the internet. So once I've set up the hotspot, I have to go to the wireless connection that's connected to the internet, and I use share. And I say share this internet connection, and then I select the wireless link that's connected to the hotspot, and I share it with the hotspot wireless connection. And as soon as I do that sharing, then the wireless hotspot is on the internet.
Wow.
So if you've ever been, say, to a hotel and they charge you for each device that you hook to the internet, I just hate it when they do that.
Yeah.
You know, you got your phone, you've got your iPad, you got the computer. Well, you hook up your computer and set up this little hotspot, and then you can have all your devices on the internet through your computer and only have one internet connection. So let me change the story. So I got to get back to the story that Jim said. So I've set up this this hotspot. Now, this hotspot works perfectly to set up Chromecast. So I could set up Chromecast with this hotspot perfectly. So I said, wow, I've got this thing set up perfectly. I got Chromecast set up. Chromecast is talking to my television set. I'm using my hotspot for the connection of Chromecast attached to it perfectly. Then I said, okay, now let me get Netflix going. So then I had to open up a VPN, and I had to get my Netflix going. And my connection to the TV was blocked.
You're
kidding. Turns out that Chromecast will not work when a VPN is in operation.
Oh, you're kidding.
That was a downer.
I went back and I checked,
and then Chromecast doesn't work if it's a VPN. So what I did, as a workaround, mm-hmm. I went down to the local electronics store. I bought an HDMI cable, and I just plugged my laptop into the TV, and then I didn't use Chromecast, and then I was able to watch Netflix movies on my TV through my laptop.
That's pretty cool.
It's kind of a long question, but I had everybody over there, both Jim and Phil. Everybody was talking about this stuff while I was over there, because I just can't work on graduation stuff. I've got to have some technical
downtime,
some technical stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
We got an email from Jim across the counter here, Jim Local.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm interested in setting up my remote-controlled webcam at home that I can use to monitor traffic conditions outside my window. The camera will be sitting on the ledge inside the apartment, so that means you...
It's not going to be mounted outside.
It means you've got an inside... It's a lot cheaper to get an inside-mounted camera.
Sure.
I need a remote-controlled pan, tilt, and zoom from my office. I want multiple users to be able to use it, but don't want to give them access to the control functions. I'd like to be able to use the audio path from the camera to transmit audio from a police scanner along with the picture. My apartment has Wi-Fi. I'll use a Dell laptop as an interface. I'd like this to be cost-effective. Thank you in advance. The guy on the other side of the console, Jim.
Hi, that's me.
Yeah, that's right. Well, okay. There are a number of options for this. Now, I didn't know whether you needed to record the video or not.
No, not really.
Just want to see it,
yeah.
Because there are options where you could record it on the cloud, you could record it in a micro SIM card, but that wasn't an issue. Now, any IP camera can be viewed by multiple people. This is an internet protocol camera, so the camera actually has kind of a web page inside of it.
Okay.
And anybody can log into the web page and watch what's going on. They just need to know the IP address. Now, I would suggest that you password protect it.
Yes.
You know, otherwise anybody in the world could do that.
No,
you know,
thanks.
By the way, there are a lot of people don't password protect their webcams. And the webcams have kind of a standard-looking web page format, and I can Google search for that format, and I can find webcams that are just that are open, that are just in people's houses, and they don't even know it.
And so, basically, does that would that allow you to control that webcam?
Yeah, I could control it.
Well, that's the whole point.
I could move it around, and I mean, it could just be in somebody's living room, and I'm just watching the webcam in the living room. They don't even know it.
It's in my apartment. I want them to see what's outside, but I don't need people turning it around and looking what's going on inside the apartment.
Right. That's that.
This would be the key, right?
Yeah, that would be the key. Now. Now, looking at your price, you can get these webcams all the way from $50 up to $1,000.
I know. Some of them are thousands of dollars.
They're all over the place. And so what it depends on is a number of factors. If you want to get mechanical zoom, it's a lot more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Mechanical zoom means that the lens is moving in and out. There's some sort of moving lens function. And that's extremely expensive. You're up over $300, you start getting mechanical zoom.
Yeah, I don't need that.
Most of the zooms that you have there are basically they're basically electronic zooms, which all that means is they just select a smaller part of the pixel array.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's a lower resolution. So it's really effectively no more information.
Right.
They just make
right.
you think it's a zoom.
Sure. It's sort of like when you zoom on your iPad, you'll notice that the resolution is less,
right.
It's
and
more
so,
grainy.
And so you can get that. But most of those zooms are only like 2x or 4x, so mm-hmm. it's not that great.
Right.
So I started looking around, and there are a couple of cameras. Foscam has a couple of cameras that are pretty good. Pan and tilt IP camera with two-way audio. And they have night vision, as they say. You won't use the night vision. They have these little LEDs that light up.
I've seen that on them. See, I was looking at these cameras, and I'm like,
yeah.
I cannot.
So this LED thing's not going to work for you. In fact, you won't want that on.
It would reflect off the window, right?
Yeah. So you're not going to use the night vision function. You'll just leave it as the regular day function. And so mm-hmm. there's one, this Foscam 18910W pan and tilt camera. It got pretty good reviews. It's for $62 on Amazon. That's your cheapest one. And it's got a slot for an SD card,
mm-hmm.
memory card up to 32 gigabytes. So if you'd want to store video, you could store it there. Now, if you want to get slightly better quality imagery,
mm-hmm.
you can get the upgrade to the Foscam, which is the Foscam 9821 pan and tilt, and that has 720p video, and that's a quarter inch color CMOS sensor. It's a better sensor. It's got an it's got a 2.8 millimeter lens, f/2.4 IR lens. So it's actually a little better optics, a little better sensor, and that's around $99.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 1-megapixel camera, and that'll 720p video. That also has got the SD card. Now, the D-Link is also not a bad camera. The D-Link wireless pan and tilt day and night network surveillance camera, that's got built-in Wi-Fi. That has one other feature. It has a built-in Wi-Fi extender. Suppose you wanted to have multiple cameras all over the place, but your Wi-Fi doesn't go everywhere.
Sure.
The cameras communicate with each other, so this built-in Wi-Fi could communicate to the next camera, and then the next camera. So you could have a whole array of cameras that would work out. And that D-Link got pretty good reviews. It's $99.
Mm-hmm.
So these are actually, you know, three options that are at the low end, because I figured that I was looking at $100 as the upper limit. That's what I was thinking.
You're probably right on the mark there. And you know what? As an experiment, I might just go with the low-end one and see where we go. Now, is it possible to – the audio path on this, is this just a microphone, or is there a way to maybe jump audio out of the speaker jack on a radio to get it into
– Now, I think the Foscam, in addition to a mic, has an audio jack.
Both models are the more expensive one.
I'm not certain.
I'll check
them
out.
Yeah, one of them. There is one of them that has an audio jack in addition to a mic.
Oh, no kidding. All right, good.
Yeah, in addition to a mic.
All right. Well, I'll have to check. I'll check out the Foscam.
So the audio jack is better because then this camera can pick up audio from the room. You see.
And I don't know what that.
And so if you've got the mic on, you're going to get audio from the rooms. But if you use the audio jack, it turns the mic off.
Here's the other thing.
Uh-huh.
The radio, mm-hmm. when the police scanner's on, I don't really need, when I'm not there, for the people that are, will be in the apartment to hear that noise, because it will drive them nuts.
So
if I can jump the audio out of the scanner directly into the camera, it'll be a quiet operation.
That's right. So there are on about half of the units, you can get that audio jack. It's not on all of them.
But
that's the one thing you'd look for. Now, once you get this camera set up, it has a web page built into it, and you have to log into it. You want to set your password, something that's difficult for people to guess.
Not like 1234?
No, you're going to have to make it busy.
Password.
And then the camera's going to be behind your firewall.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to set your firewall for something called port forwarding.
Mm-hmm.
So your camera's going to have a certain IP address, internal IP address. You're going to have to log into your router, and you're going to have to set that particular IP address up for port forwarding so that your firewall doesn't block any traffic going to the webcam.
Okay.
So that's and then once you do that, your webcam, then you'll just put in the IP address of your home with a certain port that you are forwarding to your webcam. And once you put in your IP address with a colon and the port number, it will go straight to the webcam. And you'll basically just have like an HTTP link that you click on it, and it will take you there. And then as soon as you get to your webcam, a username and password will show up.
Mm-hmm.
Put that information in, and then you're in.
You're in, and you can control. And what
then
is it? You use the up and down and side to side arrows on.
Yeah, that's it. And so it's like up and down. It's like all of these, by the way, have iPhone applications. They've got an iPad application.
No kidding.
And they've got an application that goes on your desktop.
So I can control it off my iPad.
You could control it off your iPad. That's right.
That's pretty neat.
And so that would also allow you to record the video if you wanted to, mm-hmm. right from your iPad. Mm-hmm. And then you could snap a picture, and you'd get it right on your iPad.
That's remarkable.
So then
if I wanted, if a friend wanted to see the video, I could give them the link to go look at it.
You could give them the link. But the thing is, you can't. If they have the link, you can't really – once they're in, they can do the control and pan.
So there's no way to give them a locked-out link to this?
No.
Okay.
That is the one – that I think to do that, you're going to – not at this level of camera.
He means cheap.
So this one, once you give – there's only one password to get in, and then you've got it.
Gotcha.
Now you could – it's like a 300 degree pan, so mm-hmm. you can really scan the thing around. So I guess you could put it in a paper cup or something, so they couldn't, no matter where they were doing, they couldn't look around.
I think I could. It would only be a couple of people. I can trust them.
Yeah. So that is
thank you.
And so that's the main thing. And I think configuring your port is not that complicated once you've done it the first time.
I think I can figure that out.
Right.
Or I'll just have you over.
We can. That should be fairly easy. And if you go onto your configuration, you'll see something called port forwarding.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty easy to figure.
Well, when
out.
I get this set up, we'll log in here some morning and I'll show you.
Okay, that'll be perfect.
Cool.
We got an email from James Messick. Doc, how did you get NoMo Robo to work? When I went to sign up for simultaneous ringing was unavailable for my UMA, for my Gmail phone number, as well as my AT&T wireless. Now, on an unrelated note, I love my Chromecast. And I found that Google Music is, for me, a killer app for Chromecast. Mm-hmm. Google Music gives me free storage up to 20,000 songs. My television is connected to a nice soundbar with a subwoofer. So thanks to Chromecast, I've now got a great stereo system, something I haven't had for years.
Wow.
Now, I also love it for YouTube videos. And hello, Jim. Thanks for carrying on Tech Talk, carrying the Tech Talk torch while Doc is off on his many junkets, business trips. James Messick in Kernersville, North Carolina. Well, thanks, James,
for that
feedback on Chromecast. Now, I went to the NoMo Robo site, and I did give some wrong information. They listed all of these carriers that they had, and so I selected UMA. Because I thought I dropped down the list that said they were covering it. As soon as I selected UMA, it said UMA doesn't support simultaneous ringing, and they gave me the phone number to call UMA to request that they would do it. So Actually, he's right. They don't have. They don't support UMA. They don't support Gmail, and they don't support AT&T Wireless. They support a few carriers. The reason they listed all the carriers is if they don't support it, they give you the phone number, and they want the people who have Nomo Robo to call the carrier and ask for simultaneous ring. This, by the way, was previous Tech Talk topic, and this is a way to, you know, to eliminate the amount, you know, spam calls that you get at home. We got an email from Chris. Hey, Doc, love the show. I have a question about UMA. This is another. I bought UMA Telo about 15 months ago, based mostly on hearing you talk about it on the show, on the podcast. Thank you. I love the product. You've mentioned several times that your UMA subscription costs around $10 a year. Mine cost me a lot more. I'm paying $4.95 a month for taxes, an additional $10 per month for premium features, and now $15 a month isn't that bad, and it's a big saving over Verizon, but it's a whole lot more than your $10 a year. Is UMA overcharging me? Did you sign up for a plan I don't know about? Thanks for your attention. Thanks for all you do for the tech community. P.S. Jim is, well, look at this. Jim is a great asset, too. So is Mr. Big Voice.
I think the jury's out on Mr. Big Voice.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
Chris, well.
But thank you.
Chris, I went back and checked my account. I signed up a long time ago, and when I signed up, they just said this tax deal had not been in, and there were just some very limited taxes. It was about $10 a year. Now when I went back and checked the details on my account, they've now are charging me $3.79 a month.
Oh, so you're getting charged something that you weren't aware of.
I wasn't aware of it when I went back and checked.
So you're in the same boat that Chris is in now.
And so except he knew about it when he signed up. I signed up so long ago that the taxes weren't in.
The rules have changed.
So there's a regulatory compliance is $1.78. 911 service charge is $1.59. Federal Universal Service Charge and FCC regulatory fee are 42 cents.
Now, is this going to be a deal breaker for you? You're going to stay with it?
No, no. I mean, it's still only $3 a month, and I get free calls over the whole U.S. And I get Skype rates internationally. You know, it's a winner for me. Now, I have the basic plan, so I don't pay the $10 a month, but it turned out when I went back and checked, when I've got the basic plan, it included all the features that are in the current premium plan. So I do believe that they grandfathered me into the premium plan features, even though I'm not paying for the premium plan. So I think I got some advantage by being an early sign-on. But they are charging you the right amount. But really, $15 a month is not bad. So now the other thing I did, I did get a second phone number for my fax machine, which I am paying $10 a month for my second phone number for the fax machine. So I'm paying now $13.79, but I knew I was paying for that second number for the fax machine. And I got a special ring, so the fax machine will answer it, and then if I get a regular phone call, the fax machine doesn't answer it. The only trick with a fax machine, because of audio compression, you can't send a fax unless you turn off audio compression. So every time you send a fax, you have to put a prefix on the number of *99. And *99 tells UMA, shut off compression. So I use *99 on my fax machine, and everything just works perfectly. Well, thanks for that email. It was
Thank
good.
You, Chris.
I didn't know about all those taxes, but it doesn't surprise me.
No.
We got an email from Carl Tyler. Dear Dr. Schertz, please tell your audience about the recent moonworm that's been infecting Linksys routers and how we can prevent it from infecting people who have those routers and how we can get rid of it if we've been infected. Thanks for a great show. Never miss an episode, Carl Tyler. Well, Carl, the moonworm is a self-replicating authentication bypass vulnerability. In other words, when you log into your system, you're authenticating, and you're bypassing the authentication where you have to give up a password. And it's a vulnerability in Linksys home and small business routers. If you have one of the E-series routers, you're at risk. The worm is dubbed the Moon because of lunar references in its code. Maybe one of the code names is called Lunar. Now, they're not doing much now except scanning for other vulnerable routers and making copies of itself and moving it all around, according to the SANS Institute Internet Storm Center blog. It's unclear what the payload is or whether it's receiving commands from a command and control server. I think they're just getting a network installed out there. Now, I've got a list of all the routers that are vulnerable, which I'll post to the website, E4200, E3200, E3000, all the way down to E900. Then we've got WAG320N all the way down to WRT150N. There are about 20 routers here, Linksys routers that are vulnerable. Now, Linksys knows that it's got this problem in the older routers. On the older E-series routers and wireless N access points. And there is a firmware fix, which is planned, but they don't have a specific timetable. Now, once on a vulnerable router, the Moon worm connects to port 880 and uses the Home Network Administration Protocol to identify and make firmware, identify the firmware of the compromised router. It then exploits a CGI script to access the router without authentication and scan for other vulnerable boxes. SANS estimates that over 1,000 Linksys routers have been infected. Now, here's how you fix it. Routers that are not configured for remote administration are not exposed. This is going in and activating remote administration. So if you do not need remote administration, turn off remote administration remote management access from the administrative interface. You have to log on and turn that off. But as a matter of practice at home, mine is always off. If you do need remote administration, and it's rare that you need it, but if you really need it, then restrict it so that only a particular IP address can talk to it. So if you're going to log in from another location, you know that IP address, say, I will only accept remote administration from one IP address, and that will actually solve it. Now, since the worm spreads via port 8080 and port 80 and port 8080, change the port for the administrative interface because it's looking for an administrative logon at either port 80 or 8080. So if you're allowing remote access, even with restricted IP address, change the port that you use for logging onto your administrative to one of something other than these other two ports. And the last thing that you want to do to protect yourself, update to the latest firmware. So that'll solve the problem. That was actually a great email because that is an issue on these Linksys routers. I kind of went into some detail here. They're just deploying this network, and then there's no payload lit, so we don't know what they're doing. My last email is from Ken, and this is just a simple email. He sent me this through Linksys. About 10 years ago, you gave me some advice on your radio show. I took it, and it changed my career. Thanks, Ken.
Yeah, that's great.
That was a great email.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing, but I love to get that kind of feedback.
That's fabulous. Now, there's a lot of detailed information that you passed on today. So people want to do some of these projects or want more information, where will they get that information?
You send your emails to techtalk@stratford.edu, and you can also go to the website and get all the details of what it's given you at the techtalkonline.com. I'll have the entire show posted by Monday with all of the details.
And send us your emails through that same website, right?
Yeah, at techtalk@stratford.edu.
This is Tech Talk. It's Saturday morning. Stand by. We'll have more coming up on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
To put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. It's time. Time to take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Today we're going to talk about Paul Murat. Paul Murat is known as Father of Google Analytics. Yes, indeed. Paul worked with the NASA-funded space physics group at University of California in San Diego School of Engineering, where he wrote analysis and visualization software. Paul holds a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from UCSD that he got during the same time he was working at the space science group. Then in 1994, he got the web bug after he saw the Mosaic browser that had been created by Tim Berners-Lee at CERN. That was the first browser that really opened up the World Wide Web. And so in 1995, Paul Murat and his friend Scott Crosby said, hey, I think we should start a website development company. So they set up a website development company called the Web Depot. The Web Depot. Now, they later renamed it Quantified Systems. And the reason they renamed it Quantified Systems is because they went into kind of web analytics, and it was not just making websites, so they thought they should rebrand themselves. Now, one of their first large clients, after they created a website for him, he was struggling with trying to figure out, you know, what pages are looked at, what's going on, trying to analyze what was going on the website. And it took them 24 hours to process a single day's worth of website tracking results. And they were just beside themselves trying to understand what was going on at the website. So Paul, in 1997, he personally created a new tool called Urchin to help him analyze the data. Now, using the Urchin data analysis tool, they were able to analyze their client's data in only 15 minutes instead of 24 hours. It just blew the socks off their client. And they said, you know, I think we've stumbled into something really good. So the team was faced with a choice. Should they keep providing web consultancy services, or should they pivot, as the word is, pivot the entire business and begin working on building and selling Urchin? And they decided to pivot.
Pivot.
Yeah, they found out something that would make big money, so they did the pivot. And I remember Urchin. I was using it.
Really?
I was using Urchin. I was doing all this stuff long before Google Analytics. Yeah. And I was actually very disappointed when ultimately Urchin was sold to Google, but that's another story. So they pivoted. They phased out all their web development stuff, and they fine-tuned the Urchin software. Now, there was a time period they had a big cash crunch. I don't know if you remember, we had the big dot-com crash that occurred around 2000.
Yep.
So as we were approaching 2000, like 1998, 1999, 2000, I mean, the tech just bottomed out. And so a lot of their customers faded away. So they were just struggling for cash during this time. But they managed to sort of keep enough customers in going. And they developed two tools. One tool was Urchin software that you would just download and install on your machine. And that was one version that they initially had. But Paul said, you know, I think we need to get something that's scalable, something that can handle thousands of clients. And it's not actually installed software that runs on a client. So they developed a web-based product. And the web-based product, you log in, and it will then, and you basically configure to analyze the data which is being generated by your website logging tools. And so they developed a web-based system that was highly scalable. And so then they said, well, maybe we could offer a service to internet service providers, and they could then provide Urchin as a tool that they provided if you use them, which was a very good marketing technique. So their first breakthrough came in 2000 when Earthlink signed on to use Urchin for reporting for all of its customers. So all of a sudden, with this one Earthlink account, they had access to thousands of customers. And Urchin quickly became a standard analytics tool for thousands of websites. That's how I was first introduced to it. I had an ISP that had Urchin web analytics, and I started using it there, and I really did enjoy it. By 2003, see, they weathered the cash crunch, 1998, 99, 2000. There was a recovery that began around 2000. By 2003, Urchin was one of the dominant players in the web analytics field. And it didn't take long for Google to notice. Because Google's saying, these guys are onto something that we want to be into. So the Google representatives approached Urchin at a trade show in 2004, and they offered to buy the company, and negotiations began. And the deal closed March of 2005, but it wasn't finalized with cash delivered until May of 2005. So that was the big thing. And it was interesting, on March of 2005, one of the VP of marketing for Urchin was getting married, and they were negotiating this deal. So this was one of the guys who had like 3% of the company, and so it was his wedding day, and he was about ready to go down the aisle, and he signed the contract with Google just before he went down the aisle. I'm thinking the bride must have been teed off.
She might have been a little bit upset about that.
All of his buds were there worried about getting this contract signed before he went down the aisle. So after they closed the deal with, I could not find out, by the way, how much Google paid for Urchin. I looked for this. It was actually a confidential price, and I could not find it anywhere.
Wow.
Now, after the acquisition, Urchin's web-hosted analytics software, Urchin On Demand, became Google Analytics, that we're now all familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Murette became director of engineering at Google Analytics. And to this day, he's got his hand in the overall development of the core technology. He is very much a hands-on guy. Now, Google Analytics is implemented using page tags, where a page tag is like it's a tracking tool. It's a little snippet of JavaScript code that the website owner puts at the bottom of every page. So every time somebody's on your website and they go from one page to the next page to the next page, this little code observes this and it reports back to Google. So Google can track you as you go through the website and accumulates all of this data. That's how the thing actually works. So we actually use Google Analytics on our site. We've got those snippets of code everywhere. We track everything on our website. It's a tremendous tool. I really love it. In April of 2011, Google announced the availability of a new version of Google Analytics that included multiple dashboards, custom reports, and AdWords integration. This is so you could track your advertising effectiveness. Now, Google continued to sell the standalone and installable Urchin web analytics software through value-added resellers until it was discontinued on March 28th, 2012. Because, I mean, I think it was sort of made obsolete with the web version. So there are two lessons to be learned from this story. Number one lesson is that your first idea doesn't have to be unique or flashy. I mean, they just made Urchin, but it's got to really be useful.
Mm-hmm.
The second observation here is, as soon as you recognize a real opportunity, pivot.
There you
go. Pivot fast. So there you go. All you need to know about Paul Murette, the father of Google Analytics.
We're going to pivot very quickly to a commercial. We're going to have the pop quiz coming up here on Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and 820 AM. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world.
Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to Tech Talk, Classroom of the Airways.
Mm-hmm.
And earlier in the show, of course, I was talking about Paul Murat, the father of Google Analytics. Now, if you can remember some facts about Paul Murat, you will be able to participate in the pop quiz. And if you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you'll win two tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room. Back in the beginning, Paul Murat and Scott Crosby started a web development company right after, the year after the Mosaic web browser was released. What is the name of that web development company? And if you get the right answer, so you'll simply have to contact us using the methods.
That's right. I'm about to get to that.
That's
the
right.
Methods are basically the POTS line, the following 10 digits dialed in this correct number. If you're calling from west of New Delhi, India, it's 877-936-9333. East of Falls Church, Virginia, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line for everybody else is 877-936-9333. Now, last week, while you were gone, we had Chef Christopher Carey on, who is a new addition to your staff at Stratford.
Oh, okay.
And,
Very good.
He was talking about this special event that we're going to have for Tech Talk listeners. It is the Tech Talk Listener Dinner, and it is coming up at the end of this coming week, Thursday the 27th. It'll be held at the Falls Church campus. If you want to come, space is limited. It is $20 per person to attend. But if you've won on Tech Talk here, you can use your tickets.
Yes, that is exactly right.
And you can
right.
use them for admission. And this
That's
is going
right.
to be great. The menu, there's too much stuff to mention right now. But if you go back and listen to last week's show online, you'll be able to hear all of this, what's going to be served at this three-course meal. $20 per person. It starts at 7 o'clock next Thursday evening. That's for the reception where you get a chance to meet Dr. Schertz, which, of course, is the big draw. And so dinner will begin at 7:30 sharp. And we say this because this is actually part of the class. This is the students' class that night.
Okay.
They will come in,
Fantastic.
Make dinner. Right, and then so everything stays very much on time. So we will be doing that next Thursday night. Hope to see you there.
So how do they log on? They just go to the Stratford.
Go to the Stratford website, stratford.edu, and go to the calendar events.
Okay,
and you go to February. Looked at the 27th. Click on there, and then you'll see the link to that particular event.
Okay,
and then you'll be able to fill out. You
very
sign up
good.
For it online. Doc, let's just keep it here. We're still waiting for a winner to the pop quiz, and you've got a few things. To
I've
talk
got
about.
A few things. You know, this last week, we actually sponsored the Maryland Pro Start Student Invitational. This was actually a culinary competition. I was there on Thursday night up in Columbia, Maryland. And this is high school students are competing for a particular item. And a particular, we had chefs coming in there, and the high school teams would cook different products. They were judged, and they had first place in hospitality management, first place in culinary arts, and various other prizes. And these kids just did a great, great job. We love really to work with the Maryland Restaurant Association Education Foundation in the process. row start. Stratford was a diamond sponsor. Plus, we gave lots and lots of scholarships. So it was a great program. We love working with the kids in Maryland on that.
Excellent. We still don't have any winners on the line. The question again was, Doc, if you would, please.
Yes, right. When Paul Murat, the father of Google Analytics, started his first company right after he caught the web bug because he saw the Mosaic browser, what was the name of that company? What was the name of that company that he started? And then he later changed the name to Quantified Systems, but I want to know the initial name of the company.
And here's a hint that if you were to go to a hardware store, there's one that has a similar name.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's your
there's your hint.
877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Doc, we're just going to run out the clock here today.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, there's a fan box spam scam going on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fan box tricks people into giving up their email addresses, passwords, cell phone numbers, and then it spams them relentlessly. Not only that, it spams everybody on your contact list as well. Now, what Fanbox does, they begin by notifying people, telling them they've earned money. Like, for instance, I got this email from Fanbox. It said, on March 15th, you will have earned $2.75, and your all-time earnings are going to be $234.40. Now, actually, I haven't earned anything there. I've gotten about eight emails from them, and this is nothing but a phishing attempt to try to get you to give them information. And they tell you, in order to get your money, you've got to log on and give them all this stuff. According to allspammedup.com, how do you like that? Allspammedup.com. Fanbox is run by former SMS.ac. which is a shady company that claims to be an online community that exists via text message only. There are two ways for earning for Fanbox. First, it collects your email ID, data contacts, and uses it for marketing. It may also be selling it to some other interested parties. Secondly, after sending a few emails, Fanbox sends a mail asking for a maintenance fee, which you have to pay if you want to maintain your earnings. But there really are no earnings. Here's the remedy. You get anything from Fanbox, don't open it, don't do anything with it, just delete it.
Mm-hmm.
And you could set it up. You could, if you have a Gmail account, you can report it as spam. You can set up a folder so it'll just go into that spammy thing. But Fanbox, I've gotten about eight Fanbox emails.
Have you really? I haven't yet.
Yeah, so but I've got a lot of different email accounts jumping into mine, and so it's so just be careful about that. There's something else that I learned kind of interesting. There's Instapainting.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great service. Have you ever taken this? You may have a great photograph, and you like to turn it into an oil painting. Wouldn't that be nice?
That'd be cool.
You know, take a picture of a portrait. Well, there's a company that's sponsored by Y Combinator. And it'll take any hand-painted, any photo and turn it into a hand-painted canvas for under $100.
No kidding.
It's actually a really good deal. Now, a few companies are doing this, and, you know, they're out there. But what Instagram does, it actually takes and prints your picture on the canvas. Then it sends it to China. They've got 100 painters there that do it, that will paint over it. And you can get a 12x12 canvas for $53, including shipping, or a 29x22 for $130. It's a great deal. But that's all the time we've got.
Listen,
we actually love the show. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu.
We will see you next week here on Tech Talk. In fact, if you missed the show, tuned in late, want to hear it again, it'll replay tomorrow at 4 o'clock here on Federal News Radio. We'll see you next week.
May not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT-FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500 AM and and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Coming up later on today, we've got college basketball action. The GW Colonials travel to Missouri to face St. Louis University. The pregame starts at 7:45. The play-by-play with Byron Kerr coming up at 8 o'clock here on Federal News Radio. That's tonight. The weather forecast, get out and enjoy it. 60 degrees for the high today under sunny skies. Right now outside our studios in Northwest, it is 47. 10 o'clock.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated.